next thing I know, you know, my eyes are crossing and turning, my head spiraling, and I was just shaking in the most intense pleasure I had ever felt in my life. Like, it was almost overwhelming, the amount of pleasure that I felt. And at that point, it was just so much newness. You know, this being who'd been growing inside of me for all this time was suddenly on the outside, and there's really no words that can do justice to how profound that experience is to meet a life that you've created and that you've birthed into this world. And I think for 3 days straight, I was just weeping.
Well, 2 years later, we are here.
Here we are.
Wake the fake up. Part due with my dear sister, Amber Hartnell. Thank you for coming to Laguna today. How are you?
Thank you for inviting me to come have this conversation with you. I'm happy to be here.
It's always a powerful, enigmatic vibration that I feel when I'm in your presence. Mm. Even thinking about you, you know, just the energy that you hold and the amount of love that you offer. Because at the end of the day, that's really what it is. And I just have to ask you, when I feel that level of energy from someone that's so authentic and it just protrudes every cell and I receive it, I have to sometimes wonder, are they practicing self-love 24/7? And when I think about you, I know you are. Is that something that you embody 24/7?
That's interesting to think about. You know, I think when you begin the practice, you know, there's much more deliberate awareness about creating those pathways. Once those pathways are set, it goes more into the background. So it's like,
it's autonomic.
Yeah, a program that's running constantly where the levels are continually adjusting and paying attention to where there may be deficit, where there may need to be a boosting of the energy, where there might be too much and needs to be grounded. So there's an awareness of regulating myself and maintaining my connection to the love that I am, the love that is life.
So you feel like you're the captain of your ship fully?
To the best of my ability, as much as I am aware of in every given moment, yes.
How do you deal with stress? How do you deal with the everyday material world?
In many, many ways.
Right.
Definitely breath and being present. You know, when there's any kind of stressor, for me, it's an indicator to slow down, to breathe more consciously, and to get even more present, to pay attention to what is arising in the space that's requiring that regulated attention.
So I live a similar life. You know, I'm very clear with what I can handle on a daily basis, what I cannot, what are, you know, what are my strengths, what are my weaknesses. Sometimes I sit in those weaknesses and really, you know, figure out how did I get to this situation where I'm not able to handle this properly.
Yeah, right? Very important.
What am I escaping from? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a Rosicrucian practice where you're evaluating your day. Mm-hmm. Instead of this long, lofty, projected life, you know, that sometimes we get into that fantasy or that illusion, it's just getting into the minutiae of every day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, speaking and looking at our previous conversation and our other conversations outside of a camera, outside of, you know, podcasting and things like that, I see this, you know, enigmatic figure that's gone through so many life lessons, that's brought life into this world and is now stewarding so many beautiful, I would say, experiences for many people. And it started in childhood with you, and we got a little bit into your story with your parents and what you experienced with the loss and what went through, you know, your emotional state with the relationship with your father and things of that. And that really, that rippled out there. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there was a moment there, not a day would go by that I was getting someone sending me a 4 or 5 page letter on what that podcast did for them. And not only for them, but for me as well. I had, you know, it was about a year removed from my father transitioning. And, I sometimes go back and listen to that conversation. Mm. It's very healing. And you and I and our soul family and our tribe, we seem to gather once a year, and we've had many intimate moments of going into, I would say, the hyper-synchronistic realms where a lot of the burden can be released.
Yes.
Would you say that's your purpose-driven life? Is that where what your core competency is in this realm and where you feel like you're here to serve is in that?
100%. I would say that that has been a very well-developed core competency with a lot of practice and a lot of refining the experience. So yes, and first and foremost, it's about applying it to myself and my life, knowing that anything I'm going to be able to hold for another as far as a container to allow them to arrive into and to meet those places in themselves that just haven't been met, right? The weaknesses, the shadow aspects, those blind spots. So I'm committed to that in myself. And I will say, as far as the stressor, that I've been more challenged in the last few years than I ever have been in my life, knowing that the world is experiencing a level of stress that I think is unprecedented as far as the lives that we've lived. And I've been worked in the process. It's because we are embedded within this larger system. We can't separate ourselves out from it. We're impacted by it. And so to know that we need to meet those places that are being reflected, right, that what's happening out here, I'll meet what gets triggered inside of me, what gets activated is a better word. And ultimately to fill in those gaps, right, and to transmute that unresolved energy so that I'm even more resourced and even more steady in my capacity to meet the challenges that we're facing in our life right now.
I really appreciate that transparency. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's easy to separate ourselves.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we are all extensions of ourselves, and that's not some cliche mumbo-jumbo, airy-fairy, cosmic spiritual lingo. That's true.
Absolutely.
And if you are practicing self-love, that means that you're cultivating empathy. Mm-hmm. And then if empathy is operating in your system and you know how to channel that, then you're feeling the plight of mankind. You're feeling the plight of our mother. You're feeling the plight of things that are happening right now.
Yes.
And it's hard to distract yourselves. And I think there's a happy medium there, right? Because we don't want to be living in that pain. We don't want to be living in that fear. But we also don't want to put our head in the sand and dismiss it, right?
And it's a fine line to balance that walk.
Yeah.
It's not always obvious where that balance point is. And I love this quote that I heard once. Surfing at the speed of balance. And I think of balance like a moving target, right? It's not a static point.
Yeah.
We're always having to course correct and aim ourselves back into the center, the middle, where we can be with the full spectrum of experience, whatever is arising, that we can train ourselves to stay present.
I love that.
And not numb out, distract ourselves, and all the different mechanisms that we've created.
Yeah, I love the idea of the waves,
mm-hmm.
because this mother universe that we're in is not linear,
mm-hmm.
and we are part of that. You know, we're made of it. Mm-hmm. You know, some say we're stardust, but I can say honestly say we're made of the earth just through mineralization.
Absolutely.
Right. And we are electrical, which is another part of this realm.
Mm-hmm.
And so by mimicking or, you know, getting yourself entranced with how nature works, we go into those flow states, mm-hmm. not only physically, but through our conscious.
Yes.
And, I always think of Victor Schauberger's work of vortex and implosionary energy. And I find that if I go into that implosion meditation, I can actually handle things with a lot more ease and grace because there's an oscillation occurring and I'm not stuck on a fixed point
mm-hmm.
that can break easily.
Yes.
Right?
Resilient.
Very resilient.
Able to move with the winds and the waves and all the things that life is doing. And what you just mentioned there, that implosion aspect, that movement in towards center, that's what stills us. That's what anchors and stabilizes us into that infinite stability in our core. And coming back to what you referred to in the beginning as far as the energy potential that you experience as a buildup, that is very much as a result of most of the attention moving in towards the center.
Mm.
I heard this equation once from a Bagua master about 20 years ago where he drew this diagram and he said, 80% of your attention moving in towards center, only 20% moving out. And it's a very simple thing, but it helped me to understand that even as I'm engaging in the world and with whoever's before me, if I maintain most of my attention directed inwards and anchoring into my own energy and my space, then I'm a stable field, I'm a coherent field that then actually brings out the best of what's possible within the interaction. And my partner often calls it being a dominant oscillator.
Yeah, I like that.
Because in physics, incoherence wants to entrain into coherent. So when we choose to be that coherent field, then we're naturally entraining the fields that we're participating in into a higher octave.
Makes total sense. Mm-hmm. Most fruit trees that of the same variety, the ones that fruit the most and provide the most food are the ones that have a root system that is going inwards and implosionary energy and being able to create more structure within.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I mean, that's just common sense.
Yeah.
And same thing applies there. I think this is a great segue. We're talking about implosionary energy and energy moving in, going towards the orgasmic birthing, right? And so I'm sure there's a lot of people that are listening to this that haven't listened to the first episode. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that because I wouldn't say that's your claim to fame, but I would say for your own self, that was a pivotal moment in your life.
Yes.
And I did a little bit of research on orgasmic birthing, and I don't know if this data point is right, but they say less than half a percentage of women have been reported to have orgasmic births. This has been reported by, you know, some midwife, you know, I don't know, some kind of information gathering system by midwives. 0.3% actually.
Wow.
Have you heard of that statistic?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so wow. That statistic is floating out there. Mm. Tell us and tell everybody what happened and what was that experience like on a really granular level?
Yeah, happy to share.
Yep.
So often, just to know when I'm looking away, I'm accessing some memories. So
yeah.
So my birth. Well, first of all, I'll say that I went into labor 3 weeks prior to giving birth. I actually went into labor close to my initial due date, and then realized that my husband at the time was not feeling well, and so the moment I realized that, it shut down. And then he waited 3 more weeks before he decided that the next window was open for him to come. So it was technically 3 weeks after my due date.
And you controlled that.
I wasn't conscious, but
okay. There
I was excited. As soon as the labor began, I was so excited it was happening. I was ready.
Is your first child?
It's my first child.
Yeah.
And then I went in to go let my husband know that it was happening. And he suddenly just got really sick. And whereas a couple of hours ago, he had not been feeling sick. And when I realized that he was sick, something inside of me just instantly stopped the labor.
What do you mean by sick?
Well, he had
like a fever. He got a headache.
He got nauseous, confused,
distorted.
Like chest cold, feverish.
Okay.
That was happening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember how you felt when that started to make itself apparent to you?
That I realized he was not feeling well.
Right.
There was just an awareness that this is not the time.
Okay. So you actually acknowledged that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, that I didn't want that to be happening while he was sick.
Okay.
And again, it wasn't that I decided to stop the labor. It just suddenly stopped, and I was a bit surprised that it did. I thought it might pick back up again, but 3 weeks it took before he was ready to come.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so when the labor began, it was interesting because that night before I went to bed, I was suddenly overcome with a desire to dance and move and stretch. So I just lit candles all around my space, got the lighting low, put music on, and for about 3 hours, I moved my body. I stretched deeply, like into all of the spaces until I felt completely open, not realizing that I was preparing myself for labor. It just happened organically.
Okay.
Went to bed, woke up half an hour later with the labor beginning.
So the water broke?
Nope, just the first rush. I called them rushes, as
okay.
I shared in the previous interview.
Yeah.
I didn't ever call them contractions because my experience was not of being contracted.
Okay.
Each rush that would come would be an immense current of energy moving through me that I experienced an opening and an expansion with each one. So,
I like the word magic because it's real. It's visceral.
It's real, exactly.
Absolutely.
It's just much more accurate.
Why would it be a contract?
Well,
I mean, it's in there.
That's true.
Right?
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when I entered in, I let him know that I was just going to go, just begin to move with it. And so I had created an area for myself with soft sheepskins, a padded area. And essentially for the next 6 hours, the rushes were coming about every minute or so. And I essentially moved from being in child's pose between the rushes, my big belly between my knees. And I
can't imagine if you don't know. You're probably dripping wet, normally 98 pounds.
Yeah, on the heavier side, yes.
Okay, on the heavier side, okay. 94?
Yeah, 95, 98, somewhere.
So you were just all baby.
I was all baby.
Yeah, okay, I just want to give everyone a visual of this.
Yeah, it was just a big, big belly protruding.
Okay.
Yeah, so essentially...
You're in child's pose.
Between the rushes, yeah. My body would just go down into child's pose.
One sec. What does the rush feel like, if you can break that down?
The rush felt like, again, a current of energy moving in through my body, and it would just begin to naturally spiral my body.
As it made its way down?
As it made its way through. Yeah, okay. Down and through. Down and up. I was following both spirals in both directions. It wasn't just one directional.
Got it.
And then expanding from there.
Wow.
So I would be in the child's pose, and that experience was of gathering of energy. So in those quiet pauses between the rushes, my experience was of like drawing, collecting, pulling in the energy from the farthest reaches of the universe. It felt like I felt that expanded and pulling it into my core and stabilizing. And then when the rush would come, my body would automatically rise up on all fours and the spiral would just start. And it would move from my pelvis all the way up through my head. So every part of my core was just spiraling, breathing, moving the energy until it completed. And then my body would rest back down again.
Is this something that you had consciously practiced?
No.
Or was it something that you just embodied in those moments?
Everything that I experienced in my labor and birth was all spontaneous.
Okay. So you were along for the ride.
I was along for the ride. Yeah. And one of the guidances that came to me when I first became pregnant was to not fill my head with information, to not read books, to not study, to not actually... What was clear to me that if I did that, that when I entered into labor, I would be sifting and sorting through all of this information and trying to apply it, and that would actually pull me out of presence, pulling me out of connection to the wisdom that was available every single moment, precisely guiding every movement, every breath, at a level that was much deeper than logic. It was the deeply embodied knowing that this body knows how to bring forth life.
That's the most beautiful thing I've heard, because the irrational is where the wisdom is, mm-hmm. right? We get so caught up in the scientism and the left brain and all of the information and the systems and all that stuff, and we are unable to activate the intuition. Mm-hmm. And so this was the intuitiveness that was coming from wherever. It could be coming from God. It could be coming from whatever it is, but it's unbeknown to anything material.
And it was completely unimpeded by that information. And, you know, there's a place for all of that. You know, we appreciate the value of science and the information. And there's places where the application of that, it does more harm than good.
For sure.
And I think in the birthing field, it'd be one of them. It's the most important thing is that women learn how to trust their body,
right.
How to move in accord with the energy that's moving through the body. And that's a process, that's a pathway of moving towards the fears, like learning what holds us back. You know, where do we contract and get arrested with that fear? And, you know, unkinking the hose, so to speak, from all of those fears that would, in the process of labor, impede that natural process.
I'm loving this. So you're in ceremony. And
absolutely.
What happened next?
So 6 hours of moving between these two positions. Again, the spiraling, moving, the energy, breathing with
it. This is the middle of the night, you remember?
Yeah, 11:30 is when I went into labor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so it was timeless. I did not even realize that 6 hours had passed. It felt like a blip in the scheme of it all. And so I called my midwife. Everybody was on the way. I had two very dear friends. So they were filling up the tub that we had set up behind our house under a beautiful monkey pod tree. I had taken months to plant a garden.
This is on the island.
This is on the big island.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
on the first community that we built there.
Yep.
And I created a sacred space of love and of beauty, of nurturance. You know, again, this monkey pot tree had branches that came down and around, and it was like embracing this beautiful open area. So we created a platform, put the tub on there, planted flowers all around. A friend had brought a 500-pound rose quartz crystal that I could sit on if I wanted to at any point. And so it was a field that I built and I created and tuned prior to the labor. So I would go up there and I would dance and I would move and I would sing and just really imbuing the field with grace, with ease, with connectivity. You know, just the fundamental basics that would be needed to be able to enter into that experience and ultimately let go into it. So there was a birthing field that I then after the 6 hours, made my way outside. And at that point, it was very psychedelic. Yeah. I was very much in a ceremony. And as I entered into the field, it was like sliding into this soup that I had created for myself that I then just got to marinate in and feel very held by for the duration of my labor. So for the second 6 hours, I was in the water the entire time.
Okay.
And continue to move between the stillness and the spiraling for the entire duration. And I would hold on to the edge of the tub in a squatting position, and some of the video shows that, that is well known. And the spiral would again start at the sacrum and just move all the way up through the head. There was a lot of toning that was happening in that second part as well. And I found that the toning, the deep, long, kind of rooted tones really helped me to focus my energy, helped me to continue to maintain that focus when the sensations got very intense. Because that's really what it takes as far as that transmutation of the energy is staying absolutely present, continually scanning the body to find where am I contracting, where am I resisting the current from flowing through, even very subtly. Like I mentioned, it was my left pinky, or my right pinky and my left butt cheek. They would just slightly start to contract, and so I had to keep just melting open, while then diving attention straight into the epicenter of intensity.
Wow.
And continue to dive into
it. And you're humming and toning.
I'm toning, so it's like and vagus, I'm breathing. Nerve. Exactly.
Everything, your old spinal columns vibrating. You're just one acoustic, you know, creation.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Very much so. Yeah, and the sound really helps to break up some of the intensity of that energy that can collect and gather. So the sound and the breath and the movement were the three most vital tools.
This sounds like cymatics, right? The vibratory field of geometry and shaping.
We are that.
Which is activating, coding, and
all
the things within us. Okay, so this is the best news of all time. We're in ceremony now. Then what happened?
So then I was in transition for quite a long time. So transition is when the baby is coming through the canal.
Yeah.
And it was a little more than an hour, about an hour and 20 minutes. And so the pressure was very intense for that.
You get an hour and 20 minute orgasm?
Not continuously. They came in waves.
Okay.
And so it was at one point close to the transition that all of a sudden the rush started moving through and it started coming and so coming.
Head came, was starting to come.
No, he's still in the canal.
He's still in the canal.
Still making his way down. He was a little slow and hesitant in that process.
Okay.
But as he's coming through and one of the waves of the rushes started moving through, it started picking up and getting more intense and more intense until next thing I know, you know, my eyes are crossing and turning, my head spiraling, and I was just shaking in the most intense pleasure I had ever felt in my life.
Oh, my God.
Like, it was almost overwhelming, the amount of pleasure that I felt.
Wow.
Because I was so, so open, and the current was massive that was moving through. So the energetics that were present were, it was more than I had ever allowed myself to feel.
Okay, so let's pause right now. So before we go any further, the perspective of all this based on mainstream, based on everything we've been taught, is that this is one of the most painful experiences that anyone can go through. Mm-hmm. To the point now where we're going to do everything in our power, not only through epidurals and things of that nature, but however we can numb the experience is going to be the most fruitful for the participator, not only for the mother birthing, but also for the husband as well, or the whoever is involved. It's like, let's numb this as much as we can. Let's condition it as much as we can. And I've always had clarity that that level of consciousness is removing us from so much up-leveling within our inner and outer worlds, as you can hear right now. And I'm sure you can speak way more eloquently than I can in terms of what evolution happens epigenetically. I mean, we can go on and on. So when that feeling, that pleasure starts to kick in, you're in a completely different realm at this point, right? You're not, it's like you've blasted off on some of the most powerful entheogens. You are the entheogen at this point, right? Are you feeling that your body had gone to such a cataclysmic level of excitement and pain that the thin line between pleasure was activated because you surrendered fully and you let the channel go through? What do you think was happening on a...
So there's a few things there I'd like to break down. So to speak first to culturally, this idea that we need to numb ourselves away from the feeling of pain, right? And intensity, that it's so much bigger than birth, right? So I think culturally it's been so programmed in that when we experience what would be considered to be pain, most tend to distract themselves, numb themselves, do anything they can to not feel
escape,
it, to lessen it in some way, right? Yeah. Whereas, as I've often described it, the pain is really just energy with nowhere to go. So if we can then train ourselves to move in and towards that, what would be considered pain, which I just call intense sensation, because it's, we can qualify it anyway. You know, it's
sure.
If we can learn how to be with any level of intensity and stay present and feel it, it will keep moving and moving and opening. And then it's no longer something that's collecting, that, you know, the energy is hitting up against that point in an attempt to open it. So that's why I call it the unkinking of the hose, so to speak, right? The
right.
Unkinking of the channels that allow for the energy to flow all the way through.
Like when someone stubs their toe, if you just sit there and contract and hold it in, it's going to be a lot worse than what I do is I run around and move and shake my body and allow it to go somewhere.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, when my children would, you know, hit themselves or get a little injury, you know, right away, just like, move it through. Look at that. Oh, you're just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is the case with, you know, whether it be physical sensation, it's also applicable emotional. To emotional, like on any level.
Yeah.
It's training ourselves to be present with the feeling of what is alive and moving through us and learning to embrace it and learn from it as well, because often there's teachings in that process for us too. So there's that. There's needing to train ourselves to be able to move towards pain.
Did you, were you ready for that? Did you know you were ready for that? Is that something that you had planned through your previous work in this life? And
I would say that would be another one of my core competencies that I had developed over a long period of time. So I also want to acknowledge that what was relatively easy for me in this experience was made possible through, well, at that point, you know, probably 15 or so years of deep practice in this mechanism of training and teaching myself how to move towards the feeling and the sensation and to stay with it and to move it through my system. So, and that had started earlier in my life with the traumatic experiences of immense amount of pain that I had no control over and learned very quickly that I couldn't get away from. So there was inner guidance that turned on that began to teach me from the inside out how to do that.
Right. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I appreciate you saying that because I know some people could get offended or they can feel judged, you know, and it's not something that you're pointing a finger at them and saying, this is the right way.
Of course not.
No, it's just, this is what has been offered into your realm.
Yes.
Through circumstance and karma and fate. And instead of resisting it, you know, you let it flow through you, through the work. And this is a profound example of how that work and how that practice manifested into the next part of the story, which is, you know, the orgasm getting more intense.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, did you realize you were having an orgasm?
Well, yes. It was quite obvious.
It was quite obvious. Okay. So was it like, you're like, oh, I know what this feels like.
Yeah. Well, and there was no physical stimulation of any type. It was purely energetic.
Yeah.
But it was a surprise.
What was happening? Do you think something was pressing on a spot in your body? Mm. Was there, I mean, have we looked at what's happening here anatomically?
I know that there are people that have, and I know the producer of the second documentary that I was a part of, Orgasmic Birth, that I know she's gone into some of that. And there is physiology, you know, there is certain points where the baby's head's coming down, it is pressing up against, there's various points
G-spots
that can get stimulated.
And, yeah.
When they began, baby was definitely not low enough to be pressing up against any of those points, but certainly my cervix was dilated and expanded, so
you know,
perhaps that could have been it. It felt mostly energetic to me more than anything. It was the immensity of energy that was pouring through that was moving me and animating me at that point.
So you're hurtling to the moon, or do you remember what the cosmos looked that night out on the island? Or you're...
Well, I was under the tree, so I wasn't looking up the stars. And honestly, my eyes were closed for most of the labor.
Got it.
Because my attention was very much centered inward and paying attention to what was happening and maintaining that focus. And actually, that's one of the moments that I experienced, you know, along the way when I was in transition. Because mind you, I hadn't slept. You know, I'd slept a half an hour because I had, and so my labor was 12 hours. So I hadn't gotten a good night's sleep. So getting close to the end of the 12 hours, I was tired. Like, it felt like running a marathon.
Wow.
I was like, I could just use a break right now, and I could just use a rest. And that was happening in between the rushes at that point. So I'd spiral, and then I would let myself lay in the tub in the water and just float. And at that point, I was just expanding, expanding, expanding. And, you know, I had the experience of stars, space all around me. I felt that big wow. in my awareness. And then when the rush would come, it would start to create this cosmic momentum that felt like the stars start spinning and spiraling until it was able to move all the way down through the pinhole of my head, which is how I perceived it. It seemed so, so tiny from that perspective. And then that was manifesting as a push.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't a point where I was consciously pushing. Like, okay, now we're pushing, we're doing this. Again, it was all just naturally happening. So it was the momentum of those forces that were manifesting as pushing the baby through this vessel.
Wow. That's... I just got the picture, and I'll never give birth in this life, but I can somewhat feel into that whole experience, just the wave of it. It almost feels like a double helix or something yeah. coming down the top of your head.
Yeah.
Before we go further in this story, have you paralleled this with other women out there that have experienced kind of this similar vortexing nature and complete surrender?
I've heard this since sharing, you know, and being out there. Many stories have come to me from other women, and I've heard from many women that experience of connecting into that vortex. And yeah. I mean, it's energetically the way that our system moves. It's the electromagnetic field. So it's right. actually just tapping into and harnessing those forces that are at play.
Right.
I think when we're aware of the appropriate structure, you know, of the dynamics and the structure, and we're able to yoke with it more fully, then it's able to work for us, with us, you know, without that impedance and being encumbered.
That's right. You know, your flow state is going to really predict how much force is necessary, mm-hmm. right? And we know, you know, don't force, flow it.
Exactly.
Right. So at that point, the first orgasm kicks in. How long does that last for?
Gosh, time is such a funny thing in that sure. space.
All illusions.
Maybe a minute or two.
Okay, and your people that are around you. You had your midwife there. Who else was there?
I had my husband at the time, okay. and then my one of my closest friends. Her name is Teresa, okay. my beloved companion, and her partner at the time, Marshall, who is the one who filmed for us.
Okay, and were they picking up on this resonance? What was their experience and aftermath, you know, because they didn't know at that moment your orgasm. Maybe they did. Maybe they felt it. You know, they picked up on that toroidal field. What was their experience when that kicked in?
That's a good question. I don't know what their experience was when that kicked in. We definitely...
Well, bring them in here. I want to ask.
No, let's have a conversation about it. We definitely spoke...
Group orgasm.
May everybody be blessed.
Remote viewing orgasms. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely just reveled afterwards, marveled in the beauty and the power of the experience that we all got to share together. And everyone was so respectful of my space. You know, the midwife was back. She really just let me birth, you know, came in at the end to support in that transition period where it was all new, and certainly in the birthing of the placenta, which was a whole nother thing.
We'll get there. So all these hormones are kicking in. Estrogen, progesterone, prostaglandins,
oxytocin
mm-hmm. right? And you have a background in health and wellness and nutrition and understanding the cosmic body and the material body. But all that was put aside in those moments. You were just one with nature. After the first orgasm, was the baby starting to make its way down the canal?
Yeah, he was already in transition at that.
He was already in transition. Okay, so walk us through the next step.
Okay, so this just continued, and there was a couple of more of these. I called them rolling orgasms because I was...
Rolling orgasms.
Because I was in a state of sustained ecstasy.
Yeah.
Like the whole experience was quite pleasurable to me.
Was it sexual?
No.
Okay, so it was just pure, utter bliss, God molecule, like vaping out on... Bufo Alvarius, like just the purity of one source, heaven, God.
That was the experience.
Okay, all right.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Yes. Okay, maybe I know what it feels like. Yeah. Okay, so keep going.
Yeah, so moving between those, the stillness and the spiraling. So there was a couple more rounds of those rolling orgasms. And again, I called them that because it was this distinct energy that picked up and picked up and picked up and kept rolling and rolling through until it let down. So they were... more distinct events amidst the sustained state of ecstasy.
Wow. And then what happened? You know, it's just this like never ending wave.
So then he started coming through, and I, that point, flipped so that I could put my, push my feet, you know, against the surface. And then he began to come through, and the midwife helped bring him out. And we let him come out into the water. And so we let him stay.
In darkness.
And in emerging from the smaller body of water of the womb into a slightly larger body of water, which also was part of why I wanted to birth into the water. It felt like the most gentle transition that I could offer into this world for him. So we let him stay under the water for a minute, and he just kind of hovered and just began to open himself, because they come out all curled up. And so just like a blossoming, which was really beautiful. And then he went to breathe, and we lifted him out in that moment and brought him to the breast. He began to suckle, rubbing him, all the things you do when the new one's coming. And at that point, it was just so much newness. You know, this being who'd been growing inside of me for all this time was suddenly on the outside. And there's really no words that can do justice to how profound that experience is, to meet a life that you've created and that you've birthed into this world. And I think for 3 days straight, I was just weeping. I could not have anticipated the depth of love that I could feel for this creation. And I thought I knew what love was before that. I was floored by the experience.
Thank you for that. That hit me really. I can feel the vibration in my body. One of my good friends, he always tells me that, you know, you have no idea what it feels like till you have children. You don't know what love means. Yeah. You know, and it changes everything in you.
It does.
And for you to have that level of connection, no numbness, actually the opposite of what the mainstream is. And we're not taking shots at anyone. This life is,
of course not.
This is all part of the system. These are stories that people have experiences with, and that's why we're sharing it. But for you to be at that level of presence, I mean, dielectrically, like every cell in your body, part of the process, the awareness, the feelings, the emotions, the intensity, the pleasure, the pain, the sadness. I'm beyond ecstatic for what that has done for you and your relationships everywhere in your life. And from that, what did you take from that? Where did that catapult you in your awareness of self and what you had to offer the world?
Wow, so many things.
Right? That's a lot.
Well, first of all, it definitely upgraded my nervous system. You know, my capacity to experience the pleasure of life. You know, my dear sister of mine, Saida, coined this term omni-orgasmic. And I love that, because it's what began to happen after that. It was like pleasure was a hair's breadth away, and every moment became my experience. That, and there was more that I could receive from the richness of each moment than I was previously able to before. So just bringing me even more into connection with life, into the beauty and the richness and the receptivity to allow that current of life to move all the way through me. And that fundamentally began to inform me, you know, as to the transmission of being that I'm here to be a model of, a way of living in accord with that creative current. You know, in so many of these interviews I've done around birth, you know, I've shared very freely, I'm not an expert on birth. I never claimed to be. I simply had this experience and have shared it. It's more of a fundamental life transmission because, as I describe it as that current, it's birth is creation emerging into form, moment by moment, and it does so through an infinite variety of means, right? So whether it's birthing a child, making love, dancing, making a meal, like, again, it's endless. What I'm interested in and what I have to share about is that fundamental relationship with the creative current. Right. So how much we can allow ourselves to get out of our own way to allow that current to animate us, to guide us, you know, into the sweet spot of who we're meant to be and how we're meant to express as our fundamental contribution to this world. So it seeded me firmly into my essence, into my knowingness of that if I just only be this as an example, that's more than enough. And so from there, I'd take all pressure off of having to do anything, because it's actually the transmission of being that's very clear that's what I'm here for.
That's beautiful and well said. It reminds me that we sometimes forget that we are in some kind of worldwide amnesia. Mm-hmm. You know, we've forgotten what we've forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, we're not connected to our roots. We don't know our lineage two generations down. We have no idea where we came from. And a lot of the real cosmic goo or the information is embedded within us. Yeah. And that's why, you know, I always preach that it's so critical that, you know, as we're raising children, we're just incubating their surroundings. We're not forcing a curriculum mm-hmm. onto them. We're not teaching them to memorize things and forget about them.
Yeah.
And we're letting them expand in their own free will, which is developing their intuition and helping them remember, mm-hmm. right? And so that's what I'm getting from this, is that for you personally, there's a lot of remembrance mm-hmm. that came with that experience.
Yes.
Past lives, early childhood, who knows? Akashic, we can go on and on and mm-hmm. on. Multiple realities, interdimensional. And this was a staging process for you. It's part of your coming home, so to speak.
Yes.
And I always feel, because I look at my parents, I look at my father and my mother, I definitely chose them, mm-hmm. you know? And you know, just thinking about your son, he chose you and his father and to be part of that experience. Mm-hmm. So he came in on a full mission, and I know you. And so, you know, I can quasi put myself, become your child. And I'm like, holy shit, that's my mom. Totally berserk. Mm-hmm. And, which is really, really cool. And it's fun. It's exciting. Mm-hmm. And this is what life's all about. This is it. This is the magic.
It's the substance of it.
Totally. Yeah, like, I just want to bathe in it and saturate myself in it, because everything else is kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, it's all secondary.
Totally.
Yeah, and it's all important at the same time, but if we first get this right, then it's all just a congruent expression of who we are. And then it's in its right place.
Absolutely.
And it's serving of the whole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where are you right now in your realm? What's going on with you today? So we'll bring it into present time. Mm-hmm. What are you doing in life?
I'm doing a lot right now. Yeah. I'd say the things that are I'd most highlight are, well, I founded an organization called the Temple of Wholeness. And we actually found it as a 501c3 church, a religious organization, really as intended to be somewhat of an antidote to some of the aspects of religion that have unfortunately separated us from our direct connection to the divine. And then specifically within the Catholic Church, you know, I feel it's been a very destructive force on this planet, we can say. And it's in specifically in separating us from our connection to the earth, to our bodies, to the divine feminine, which all of those aspects are aspects of the feminine principle. And it's very clear this needs to be restored in order for us to find balance and rightness.
It's imperative.
It's absolutely imperative. Yeah. We're not going to make it unless we do. So,
right.
So that's really much at the heart of it, is helping to restore our connection to our inherent wholeness, knowing that we all come in whole, complete. You know, we each have the seed at the center of our being, that divine blueprint that contains all of the information for who we've intended to become in our fullest expression. And just like any seed, it needs the conditions of nourishment in order to grow and thrive naturally, as it's designed to. So creating the conditions for wholeness to be realized, for that seed to flourish, for each one to bring forth the gifts they came to bring to this world is my primary focus. And I'm doing it in a variety of different ways, through the individual immersive experiences, the group experiences, and building out a whole ecosystem that will help to educate and create pathways of practice and community that can practice together to strengthen the inner knowing, but also in the context of others who are doing the same, because we know it's so much easier and we do it together, and we have to build a field together and build that momentum.
Thank you for what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, you're holding the line for so many, whether directly or cosmically. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel that there's a lot of wisdom keepers that are, you know, holding the plane down, so to speak, for a lot of the treachery that's been unfolding.
Yes.
And we're in heavy times right now.
We are.
The mass manipulation is, you know, it's probably at the highest it's ever been. But I also see a renaissance of people saying enough of the bullshit.
I see it too.
And stepping into their power. And, you know, there's a line being drawn in the sand. And it's not a war. It's actually just coming to love.
It's a cleansing.
It's a cleansing.
Yeah. And I've been thinking of it like we're in the time of the collective pimple being popped.
That's what David always says.
And it's like it's all been there. All that infection, that cesspool, right, of corruption has been there, but it's been pretty well hidden for at least most people, unless you've, you know, had the eyes to see and delve into it. And it needs to pop. Like that infection needs to come out in order for the healing to happen. And so it's challenging. It's a lot all at once, especially for those that haven't had any prior experience with this. You know, it's a lot to be with, you know, and to meet. And it's essential.
Yep.
And it's absolutely true what you're saying. There are those of us that are called to be those anchors, you know, for the true organic reality.
That's right.
And to stand in that and to broaden those fields so that it makes it easier and easier for others to access it when they're ready to remember.
Every day you keep escaping and numbing is going to make it harder and more build up.
Yes.
You know, that's a litmus test. That's an acid alkaline test. That's understanding inflammation, you know, dysregulated inflammation in the body is just low grade, unaccounted inflammation that's constantly running. That's what leads towards disease. And so I like that analogy to the internal and the external experience of being a human being. And we got to get out of the doing and doing and all of that. What's the best advice you can give a young lady who's planning to have a family and is getting ready to possibly go into the, you know, the step forward of bringing life into this world?
The best advice I can give. Well, first of all, I'd like to just kind of lay a foundation down of the way that we relate to that process. You know, I feel it's important to restore the dignity to motherhood. You know, and culturally, it's been, you know, somehow put into this box of like, oh, you're sacrificing, you're compromising all these other things you could be doing to become a mother, or it's somehow second rate, or I'm just a mother, the things that women say. It is, to me, the most important position that you could fulfill on this planet, to bring forth life and to nurture it in a good way. I mean, that's the next generation, you know?
We wouldn't be here. It's existential. Like, it's part of this reality.
Yeah, so first to relate to it with so much dignity and reverence and honor, that it's an honor to be a vessel to bring forth life. And then to do the work that's needed to root out those fears, to find, you know, what's been passed on that you've taken on as far as belief systems that, you know, would interrupt that natural process, you know, and cause that contraction and fear when the system would actually like to dilate open in expansion.
Right. I love that. I, you know, I've been speaking on the fallacies of the New Age medical system, and which is actually draconian in my perspective of how people are giving birth and all this. And again, I say this without judgment, but I've just seen so many issues and so many problems come about. And there's a lot of technical aspects that we can get into. I think that might be a later conversation, or I actually have a really incredible midwife that's going to be joining me pretty soon.
And we'll probably get into she'd be the one to share about all this for sure. She'd be the one.
But, but at the core of what you represent and what your embodiment is really the nucleus of how to go about all of those intangibles. This gnosis that you are your own medicine woman, that you are the channel, that you are the God embodiment of bringing life into this dimension, whatever this world is. And it's for you to unfold, not from anywhere else, is the key. And that right there is the ultimate level of self-sacrifice and self-love and the definition of empowerment. I don't see anything else in this world, and I'm speaking as a man, I don't see anything else that trumps that in any way.
I don't know of anything either.
So I really appreciate you always with the clarity, you know, the crystal clairvoyance that you offer is received by anyone in your field. And it's just nothing but reverence on my end and our entire tribe. So we love you. We love you and we support you fully. And I can't wait for more unfolding and more experience with you. And if you don't know Amber personally, but you want to learn more about Amber, what's the best way that people can find you and communicate with you? Obviously, we're going to put this everywhere. This is going to go everywhere, but how can they find you?
Two ways. So I have my personal website, amberhartnell.com. And that's more of my just personal art kind of offerings. I definitely have some embodiment support and offerings there. And then the main place that I'm serving is the templeofwholeness.org. So that's this organization I've created. We're building out a whole ecosystem and I'm creating a collective of wisdom transmitters, as this is clearly meant to be a collective of many people who have a different lens, looking at the same diamond from different angles, and we need all the different perspectives to round it out and for it to be whole and complete.
No, I'm in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you are.
I love it. templeofwholeness.org. And again, bless you on your journey. And every day for me moving forward after even this conversation is going to be different. Mm. You know, that's the power of being so hyper-present. You know, I don't take any of these things for granted. And I'm very much appreciated to be able to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you, Shervin. Again, okay. Delighted at the opportunity to converse with you and explore these topics together.
And wake the fake up.
That's right. True organic reality, anchored here and now.
That's right.